Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to this week's episode of the Smart Dating Academy podcast. If you are a first-time listener, a special welcome and a giant hug from me to you. I'm so glad you're here. Today, you have tuned in for a great episode, ladies and gents, because I have my friend Meredith Goldstein, who hosts the Love Letters podcast, which is a storytelling series where people share important moments from their love lives. Is there anyone better to have on this podcast? I mean, not only that, Meredith's also an author. She's a journalist, and she's had an advice column at the Boston Globe for 16 years. She's written books. She's just freaking amazing. Meredith, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited. And you guys, if you're not watching this on video, you should see Meredith's in like this cave, and it's like this super serious studio with soundproofing tiles behind her. And she's got like pilot landing headphones. Like, it's the real deal.
It's kind of the real deal, but you're not seeing like the Twilight and Buffy the Vampire Slayer dolls that are just to my left. So I'm not too serious of a person, I promise you.
Well, I figured if you've been writing an advice column for 16 years, you probably have a good amount of levity and fun. So, well, why don't you just start out? Tell us a little bit about you and your story, and then we'll talk stories.
Sure. So I've been working at the Globe for like 2 decades and started as a regular reporter and really started writing about lifestyle trends. And if you can take a time machine and go back to, I don't know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, like, social media is not that old and Facebook is not that old. I started in this job writing about social trends when Facebook became public to non-college students. And wow. I remember one of my first stories about why that mattered was that it had ruined high school reunions, that you could go before and like be surprised, like who got hot, who didn't. But Facebook told you everything, right? So these were like, it makes me feel old to talk about it, but these were like early stories about, is it okay to text? People are texting instead of calling. Like, I always feel like grandma when I say this, but it was a huge social change with technology. And as I moved forward with these stories, I was like, you know what? I'm not originally from Boston. I'm from Maryland. Boston, where I live, is a very town. I mean, there's literally a movie called The Town about it, but it is a place where everybody kind of knows each other. And I thought, why don't we have a local advice column? We had national ones, but not local ones. And I thought, these people want to read about themselves. They want to read how some other Red Sox fan got dumped. They want to know. So we started this advice column, and you know, it's really like counterintuitive, right, as a reporter, but there are so many advice columnists who had been reporters. They're not mental health professionals. They are journalists who are interested and perhaps want to be a little bit bossy. So I've always approached the column with an opinion about stuff, but also, and you know, in moving into the podcast as a journalist about like, what are we doing and how is it changing? And what is the anthropology of all of this?
That's amazing. And when you first started the advice column that was local, was it on love or was it broader than that?
I just did love because I thought, you know, it probably was my age at the time. Like, I was, you know, entering into my 30s, watching so many peers get married and have kids. And I didn't want to do that. I definitely didn't want to have kids. I love kids. I love other people's kids and then dropping them off when I'm done and want to go home and have a glass of wine and not think about it. But I didn't know where that left me. And I, as a journalist also, you kind of feel like I could just watch this from the side. And I think there was like a little bit of a cowardice in my interest in it, but also as a observer. I also, my late mother was, my parents got divorced when I was young, and I watched her date, you know, through her 40s, 50s, and 60s until her death. I mean, my mom, not long before her death, was, you know, she was in stage 4 cancer treatment and was like, still looking around and truly embrace the idea of finding love. So I think for me, I was always very interested in how love changed, how marriages changed, public policy, how it affects how we date. This was just always an area of interest. So right now I've been broadening the column to allow for friendship conversations because I just think it's so important. But right off the bat, it was like all love.
Right. And you're right. I mean, friendship is love also, right? We get love from so many different places. We tend to think of love as, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend, or girlfriend, girlfriend, right? And it's human to human romantic love. But I try to remind people that work with us at Smart Dating Academy, and sometimes they'll say, oh gosh, I'm lonely. I wish I had someone to love. And I'm like, but let's look at all the sources of love that exist in your life already, right? And just the act of doing that, it's like, okay, I've got my friends, I've got maybe people have siblings, neighbors, colleagues, right? And really thinking about the fact that we are awash in love already.
Yeah. And I think when we, I mean, easy to say, but when we build up community like that, it makes the love, the romantic love we might find, that much richer. And it makes us come to it from a safer place. And yeah, I mean, one of the reasons I'll date or not date in the past in my life was perhaps what my friends were doing also. So we have a great influence on each other too. We might be more likely to seek romantic love if our friends are doing that or not in some cases. So I just think it's all important. It's all love. But yeah, right off the bat, I just wanted to know who was dating, who was getting married, what were their problems? Why were people getting divorced? I wanted to know everything.
Okay. So, you know, tell us some good stories. I'm sure you have seen from your column as well as your podcast, like just, you know, explorations of dating, love. Is there anything that sticks out to you, a good story?
So, I mean, there's so many good stories because behind every letter, there is a really interesting story. And in the early days, it was just wild stuff, right? Like, there was a lot of snooping, so much snooping and spying in the early days of my column. And sometimes I wonder why that's not as much of a case anymore. And I think that's because we got two-factor authorization, or we actually learned how to secure our property better. But in 2009, people were just like opening their partners. Maybe they were on a date, and when the person went to the bathroom, they were looking at that phone. They were, you know, once smartphones became a thing, everybody wanted to break into everything. And then it became, well, which is worse? If you find something you don't like, which is worse? The snooping or the cheating? This was a constant conversation. You know, if you find, oh, well, you're, you know, talking to three other women, well, is that worse than the fact that you broke into the phone? Usually with all of this, I'd be like, if you get to the point where you're breaking into somebody's personal private property, you probably stop doing what you're doing, the whole thing. But then as we started the podcast, it gave me more time to get into people's really detailed, amazing, weird stories that happen to be universal. So one of my favorites is a woman, and the episode is called Balls to the Wall, if you need to find it, and you'll hear why. A middle-aged woman, her husband turns 40, and he looks at her and says, I need to build a ball pit in our basement. I need to do this for me, not for our four children, two of which were a little bit of a surprise. This was not a couple with a lot of money, four kids, not a lot of, you know, extra finances to run around with. And he said, in order to be a happy person at 40, I need my own ball pit, like Chuck E. Cheese.
Your like
pitch,
Chuck E. Cheese.
Chuck E. Cheese. You are McDonald's. Yeah. And this guy, by the way, is over 6 feet tall. So this would be a large ball pit.
It's a big ball pit.
It's a very large ball pit. And the question that she had was, is this okay? And how can I stay in this marriage without resenting this, what seems like a wild, weird decision? And also, what does it mean? Why does he need the ball pit? And I loved this story because she is a psychologist. So her instinct was to pick apart, My husband's not trolling me. Why does he need a ball pit? And she actually, by the end of the episode, really gets to a place where she talks about, well, how do we measure success? How do we self-soothe? By the way, I did this episode during 2020, so we were on Zoom. Everything felt very locked down. And watching this grown man get into the ball pit and the face he made, the happiness of just childlike joy. You know, she said, what's the difference between this and him taking a grad school class? What's the you know, the ways we better ourselves. She was able to really make peace. I by the way, I have a lot of people who listened to that episode and were like, not on my watch, no ball pit in my house. So like they could not get their heads around it. I have an episode that might be of particular interest to your audience, which is about the cost of dating.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's called Those Opportunity Costs, the episode, but it was 2 20-somethings. And they're both at the start of their career. One was in D.C. I think one was in a city in the Midwest. And I mean, they've accidentally spent full paychecks on dating.
Wait, each on each other? Sorry.
No, these were two separate people. And I wanted to get, you know, sort of two takes on this, you know. And one guy said, like, one woman, one man.
OK, one woman, one man.
Both straight.
Both.
Yeah. Straight. Both straight and, you know,
back into a date.
Yeah. And well, into dates. So like getting to the end of the month and realizing I can't cover my expenses because if it's $100 a pop for a drink and an appetizer in DC for two people, you know, I wanted to see his experience versus hers. And you multiply that when you get into like somebody with more money. Right. But like, I just thought these people have to get out there and they feel cheap if they say, let's just take a walk. And yet it's bankrupting them. So that while it's actually quite a funny episode, despite the fact that it feels a little bit bleak. One episode also that always comes to my mind is a woman who is very happy in her marriage, except they don't have sex and she likes to have sex. And it's like 99. She always says it's like 99% perfect. I think that was the name of the episode, something like that. But another one where.
But did they not want to have sex? Like, let's.
He just wasn't that interested. She said like once a year. And she said, you know, so many other couples give up one piece of what they want. This one is, I will give this up. And it just was, it was a controversial one with my listeners because people really didn't understand how she could keep going with it.
What was the trade? Like how important, if she really liked sex, how did she resolve that?
And she really does. She really does. But she really loves him. And it was heartbreaking and complicated and made me think of what else makes up a relationship, you know, when that's certainly a part of it. But I mean, the second season, which probably was around 2019, is all about, every episode is about how to meet someone. So I also love that season too, because it's like, you know, a woman makes a decision to hire a matchmaker, right? Does it work? It does, right? Like investing does. She eventually divorces that man, but to have like a successful marriage she married somebody, right? And so also just that whole season of stories. We had a woman, I love this one. This was somebody I knew in real life who, when I knew her, she was in 20s, 30s and joined every club. I'm talking about like floor hockey, volleyball. Like she was like, I'm going to meet somebody. Book clubs. She started book clubs, classes. She would go to a paint class and it was all women. And then she'd be like, oh, like I spent the money on the class. In the end, when I knew her, I just kept thinking this person really likes activities. But in fact, she was truly looking for a partner. And in the end, she meets her husband on a ski slope, not as part of a club, but she did say all of those clubs and the forced practice of talking to a stranger at those clubs made her a person who walked straight up to her now husband to talk to him about skiing. She would never have done it. So it's these stories like can be really hopeful. But the letters, I mean,
that's a great thing, though. Like, I just, not to interrupt you, be able to build the muscle of learning to make small talk with new people, right? And so many people on dates get socially anxious, like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to talk about, or this person seems shy. But if you do it enough, everything, I believe almost everything is a skill and a muscle that we just have to develop, including rejection to some extent, right? If you go out and you force yourself to, you know, do things that are crazy and people will say no to you, you kind of get used to hearing the no. You're like, okay, that's fine. I didn't die. It didn't end up on the cover of the New York Times. I'm okay. And so developing that muscle through going to those clubs is great. And developing, guys, the talk muscle through dating, right? Some of you will go, oh my God, Bella, I've been on 200 dates since I've been working with Smart Dating Academy and I haven't met the right person yet. I'm like, it doesn't matter. This is a journey.
It is. And I love thinking about some of the clubs she did because she was bad at some of those things. Like, it's not like she was, you know, she's not a very good painter. She's not. So it also gave her the chance to sort of not just get used to rejection in dating, but do hobbies, right? How many of us really spend time doing something we are terrible at just for the joy of trying? And I see how it has informed the rest of her life. Like, she's someone who has a very rich life outside of her relationship because she learned how to be interested in things, even in moments that were really cynical. So, you know, I love that episode. And yeah, I mean, it's not, no one just walks into a first date really good at everything. Well, some people do probably, but you know what? I'm not sure it's genuine all the time.
No, I'm completely with you. And, you know, and I love that you talked a little bit about the costs of dating. And for those of you listening, and you can probably empathize, you know, especially guys listening to this and a lot of women as well, you know, there are hidden costs for women to dating, right? I'm going to go maybe get a blowout, or I get lashes done, or a manicure, or maybe if you're a single parent, you have to, you know, hire a babysitter, right? There's so many hidden costs to dating. I'm a huge believer still, Meredith, even we're out of COVID, do a video date to pre-qualify the person that you're going to meet. What do you think about that?
Well, listen, I'm an introvert who is like loves to just stay in my pajamas and not go anywhere. So I was very upset when people told me that they were no longer having that quick FaceTime or that Zoom before they took a walk with someone, because that was what we had to do, right? During lockdown, you had this opportunity to do something online. And first of all, it tells you whether somebody's going to show up and follow through. If they do that, they might actually, yeah. And you save time, you save money, but also I tend to think, and maybe I'm just speaking for myself, you would know more about this, but you kind of are relaxed in your own home. Like, you're wearing your sweatpants. I used to, back in the day when I would be like, if I went through a long phase where I was not interested in dating and people would set me up and I'd be thinking on the date, how long do I have to be here? When can I go home? What will I watch? What will I binge watch? I'm so excited to do that. Will I have a bagel? I was somebody who couldn't focus on someone in front of me because I always want to go home. And then sometimes when I get home, I say, oh, that was a good time. Why did I want to get home? So this idea that I could already be home and say, is this person going to motivate me to leave home, was exciting to me. And I think if you're like me or you're experiencing dating fatigue, which I'm sure you hear about all the time, but so many letter writers are like, ugh, I'm so tired of this. It feels like a job, right? It's like a little bit less investment.
It's so much less investment. It's 20 minutes, right? You do a quick video chat, you know, in order to plan the date, right? If somebody's like, hey, do you want to meet up for drinks? It's like, hey, how about, you know, we jump on a quick FaceTime or a Zoom or a Teams or in the app and we can try to sort out the details. That's like your sneaky peeky way of saying, do I want to invest 2 hours in this person?
And you're never like, I am, my significant other I met during lockdown, and I'll say I'm biased because we've Zoomed first, and I was not intending to leave the house until it was safe to do so, and we wound up taking some walks. But interestingly, I like dated a little online, really out of boredom and solidarity with a friend, but very minimally. I really was not in the market to meet someone. I really liked my life as it was. But I had two dates that week. And when I say dates, I mean like Zooms. Yes. And the first, and then I was like, once I'm done with these two, I will rest until there's vaccines in a less scary world. First one, this was a guy, wherever he is, I hope he's well, who was just very good looking and a scientist. And of course, that was extra sexy at the time because I was like, this is the person that's going to make me able to. He's going to save us. Also, in one of his photos, he had a V. And when I say a V, I mean, that's what I call it. It's like he was playing volleyball. He was shirtless and wearing like beach shorts. But the photo wasn't gratuitous. It wasn't like, look at my hot bod. It was just like, I like to do things, right? It was very subtle. But you, when someone is very muscular in their waist area and they are a man, there's like a V that can happen with the muscle. That's what I call, you know what I'm talking about?
I know, the V. It's not just the six pack, it's the V.
It's the V. So I am not someone who does a lot of exercise, and I do not have whatever the equivalent of a, well, yeah. So I was like, I have my own V, but it's not that V. And I was thinking, I don't even know if I could be with somebody with a V. What would that feel like, right? And the truth is, once we got on our little Zoom, I was like, okay. He's such a good-looking, smart guy, and we were so different. So, so different that I was like, this was fine to do as a 20-minute, like you said, 20 minutes.
Like an increase.
Yeah, I was like, and now I can say that I have technically been on a date with someone with a V. I did not see the V in person, but I believe in it. I have faith that it is there.
Did you have him lift a shirt to show the V?
No, I just, in the way, like, I have, my spirituality tells me the V exists.
You saw the V.
I mean, I saw the V in the picture. Photoshop can happen, but I believed it. The next day, I was like, I'll just talk to this one guy and then I'll be done. And I was eager to be done. And I've been with that guy for 4 years now. And this is not to say he isn't good looking and wonderful and athletic and all of these things. He's perfect. But it just, it's fascinating what you assume you're going to like in person based on an online profile. And that, you know, he charmed me. I just was having a good time. I didn't even feel like it was a date. It was a first date that just felt like talking to somebody I should have known forever. And I wasn't thinking something would happen. I was like, this could be my COVID pen pal, but I just had a good time. And I think we probably talked for an hour. So it just, you don't know. And Zoom is like such a nice way to, or FaceTime, whatever. I get it. Sometimes you want to go in person, and maybe sometimes you want to date casually, in which case also like just show up because you're not going to go home with anybody on Zoom. But
right,
if you're dating with intention, I just think it's a nice step.
It's a great step, and it's a great step. And you referred to this loosely. It's a great way to check somebody's earnestness and their reliability. Can you, and their techno savviness, okay? Can you get on a video call, right? Most people today can, but there is the ever-present odd bird that's like, I don't know how to do that, right? So there's, FaceTime's been around on phones well before Zoom. So do it. You won't be sorry, right? Yeah. The only real disappointing dates that our clients at Smart Dating Academy go on are where they skip the video dates.
And that's really, that's interesting. And I'm not surprised. Do you find that people are resisting when you tell them to have them?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, and here's a big misnomer to this day. You know, I'm just an in-person person. I'm like, okay, first of all, what does that mean? Second of all, another one, I don't look good on video. I'm like, that's your internal mirror. You look just like you do on video as you do in real life, right? What we see in our mind's eye might be different, and we're forced to look at our image on camera. But ultimately, you all look great. Do video.
Also, you can control that in a way that you cannot in real life. Like I by year one, I mean, you're not looking at me on my best at Zoom right now, but I would have a soft light, a Zoom background. You know, there was a way to, I felt like Zoom was actually quite forgiving. And in fact, whenever I'm on Microsoft Teams for a work call, I'm like, I look the worst. And I feel like on Zoom, I'm a model. So I don't know. We all have our...
I thought you were a model, actually.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah. I mean, can't you? The funny thing is also with Zoom is just, I understand, or FaceTime, I do understand that it is difficult to look at yourself, and that now I find it difficult not to look at myself, where sometimes in person, I'm like, do I have food in my teeth? Because at home, I know. Like, if I'm... So if anything, I feel like it's a controllable thing, but I do understand for some people who might be drawn to inspect their hair, they might be distracted and not as present, but you can always hide your own video and not look at yourself while you do this.
Yes, I'm a big fan of that as well. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about are there pieces of advice? Are there kind of certain themes? You alluded to those when you first started your column, that snooping was a big deal and it was a very pervasive theme, right? And then we get to face ID and two-step authentication, and now people aren't snooping as much, or it's much harder to snoop, so now we just don't snoop. And a lot of partners give each other their passwords. Like, you know what? I really have nothing to hide, so go ahead and look through my phone. My husband knows my password. I know his. My kids know ours. Like, whatever. It doesn't matter when there's nothing to hide. And today, do you find that there's certain themes that continue to come up that people just want your advice on?
I will say dating fatigue is one of them. I think for some people, lockdown was a gift. Despite all the fears in the world and the terribleness, they felt like they were doing right by staying home and not doing anything. And for some of those people, it had been so long since they felt like they could just stop working at this for a while. I think there are evergreen questions I still get periodically. When do you say I love you? It's like a forever question. And I happen to not think I'm not as interested in I love you as I think other people are. I like specificity of language. So when somebody says that, I'm like, what does that mean? You know, I love you at 6 months is different than I love you at 5 years. And I like to hear what the actual thing is. If I love you means I'm really hoping we don't break up because I am so into this, that is more powerful to me than this thing I can say to a bunch of people in my life and mean it in different ways. So I'm always interested to know how it affects people. And how it hurts people, because if you say it and it's not said back to you, the other person might feel exactly like you do, but they have a different relationship with that phrase. So I'm always telling people, if somebody isn't ready to say it, like, just ask them what they do know. How do they feel? It's like, be specific.
So that's more important than those three words, you know, and I hear this occasionally with our client base. Like, they'll come across a partner and, you know, they're like, we've been dating months or 18 months and everything's great and we love each other and we, you know, we're committed and we've met each other's kids and grandkids, but we haven't said the L word yet. And my advice typically at that point is, okay, have a conversation about it.
Just totally.
Like, we haven't said the L word. We haven't dropped the L bomb yet. What do you think?
And like, what does it mean to you? Like, some people say it when they know they want to marry you, right? Some people say it and they hold it for a time where it means something else. So, I even think that if people are saying it, it's okay to say, like, when I say that, here's what I mean, right? Like, again, it being vague doesn't really help a lot. So but I don't think it's some deal breaker thing. If, you know, a lot of people write in, we just had a letter a few days ago from somebody whose girlfriend said it. And there's two women dating. And she was like, is it okay that I just, like, I'm really into this, but can I give it a bit? And it's like, sure. If everybody, you know, like, everybody's on their own path with I love you. If you're not feeling loved and you feel like you're giving love, that's something else. But that is all 16 years, letters about I love you. I think a lot of people right now are saying, young, all of different ages are saying, how important is marriage? Mm-hmm. And and I try not to go into this with a bias because I don't know how important it is. I have friends who are not married, who have been together for more than 20 years, own property together, and have outlived in their relationship so many of my friends who got married. So it doesn't give you a specific guarantee. I also understand why it's important. And I like to go to weddings and I think it's a very joyful thing. But especially right now, we're seeing a declining birth rate. We're seeing, you know, I was just actually looking at my own state's marriage rate and it's, you know, dropping. What are we doing? And is domestic partnership better? In Massachusetts, where I live, we had a city that became the first city to put polyamory on the record, meaning you can legally register with more than one domestic partner. So you can, this was because of COVID, because there is enough of a polyamorous community of people who are in networks together, right? That they wanted everybody to be able to have access to record, visit each other in the hospital. I think the media often covers polyamory like everybody's got three partners, and I don't think it is the, I do think there's a lot of open relationship stuff we don't talk about, but I'm not sure the majority of people are polyamorous. But I do think it's interesting, because anytime there's a public policy change like that, where suddenly this is okay, says the government, right? Everybody's like, well, what am I doing? Is this a model for me? I know more people who have domestic partnerships than they do marriages now than I did, 10 years ago. And there's something to that. I think it's all related. So what am I trying for? What is the model? What is the thing I want to do?
Right. And I think that is a personal question, right? Yeah. What do I want? What do I value? What am I okay with, right? On the dating apps now, you see things like CNM, ENM, we would say if there's an acronym on there and you don't know what it means, just Google it before.
Google
it. Like, what's female-led relationship? Google it. FLR, and you'll see what it means. Are you okay with that? It's like, ooh, not okay with that, right? Yeah. Okay, great. Left swipe. And so I think that when you know what you want, and many of our clients know that they want a monogamous long-term relationship. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean it has to lead to marriage, but so we're not going to swipe right on consensual or ethical non-monogamy. That's great. That's for others. It's not what I'm looking for long-term.
Yeah. And I just think a lot of people want a monogamous traditional relationship in all of these wonderful ways, but the way we talk about things can make us say, okay, well, let me think about that. Do I want it to look a certain way? Do I want that to look like husband and wife? And do I want it to look like my parents' relationship looked? I like that everybody's being a little bit more thoughtful about what they enjoy versus what they think they want. And I will tell you, a lot doing a lot of couple interviews on the podcast, many times off mic, the happiest people will then say to me, oh, and we were open for 2 years here. And I'm like, oh, I wish we had talked about that on mic, because I like to know how it works.
You get happy?
Yeah. And like, was it the openness? And also, why didn't you want to say that on mic? And also, if so many people are secretly open and loving it and loving their partners more because they have those eras of their relationship, like what can we learn? And by the way, you're talking to somebody who like has no energy for anything but monogamy. So I speak from a place of traditional in terms of that, but I'm interested and I want to know. So
it's really interesting. I remember pre-COVID, I got my first inquiry from a guy, and it turns out that he was married to a woman and they had decided to open up their relationship, and she thought it would be a good idea to get him on the dating apps. And so she had met me at an event and said, I know someone who can really do a good job on your online profile. And so, for me, I was like, wow, this is it's kind of a new realm for us. Like, we're helping people to find long-term committed partners. How does this play out? And I was very clear with them, like, our system kind of leads to this. And most people that come to us are really looking to fix their pickers and pick one person that's good for them. And so they're like, no, it's okay. We don't care. And so it's okay. Cool.
We have an episode, another interesting one, where two people, a man and a woman, are dating and they say they can be open. So, they're not married. They don't live together. But they were like, but we would have to tell each other. They say, right, if we want to see somebody, sleep with someone else, date somebody else. They both, and she says at this point in her life, I think I've always been like a little bit gay. Like she said, I think I'm bisexual. I think I have found women attractive. And even though I'm approaching middle age, I might want to see how this goes. This is very Boston. They both match with the same woman. They both go out with this woman separately. It takes them a bit to realize that this is the same woman. The three of them become a little throuple. It works for a while. Small world, Boston. What does not work is when two people of the three want to break up. The women decide to break up. Now they're both seeing this guy. And eventually it went back down to two, and eventually that relationship ends too. But it was fascinating to me because I do feel like, and in so many cities it's like this, you're like, oh, is everybody connected to everybody? And imagine opening up so the world can be so big and you pick the same person. Small world in that.
You know, I often wonder, and maybe you can shed some light on this. You know, again, we work kind of in the world of mainly people looking for a committed partner. Do people that you've interviewed, lots of couples, it sounds like, that have open relationships or have had them, I'm curious about the couple, like you said, that's really happy that opened their relationship but then closed it again. Like, what do you see any differences? Do you see any patterns in traditional relationships versus these open relationships?
The couples, and I don't want to, like, because some of them aren't on the record about it in their episodes, but I will say this, the couples that opened and closed, and they just seem to have a really great sense of communication. And also they were open and then closed and maybe will be open again in the future for really practical, boring reasons. Like, they were like, oh, when we met, we were together. We also kept it open. And then we had a kid and we're like, actually, we're just trying to change a diaper. Like, it was so, their stories were kind of boring in a delightful way. You know, maybe somebody was caregiving for a parent, or maybe they just didn't feel like seeing anybody else. But there were moments in their lives where it made sense and other moments where it made no sense. But they were always the primary partnership. And what I will say is that in those couples, they very much resemble what I have long seen and talk about with in a community of gay men. And I swear I'm not generalizing here, but it is a practice of, you know, I think about, like, Dan Savage, right, in his, like, sex column, and he'll talk about, he's been married to his husband for forever and they're monogamish, he says, right? And, like, you know, there are all these people being upset with him, conservative people being upset with him for how he lives his life, and he's, you know, devoted to his spouse. Like, so I just feel like all of these couples seem really calm about it. It's just like not a cheating, like they are very secure and they communicate and they're together. And guess what? If they have a teenager who is yelling at them, that's probably not the year they're, like, running around anyway. They're just, it's a part of their lives when it makes sense.
Yeah. And it makes, I mean, what you're saying makes sense. It's kind of, you know, making me think that there's such clear communication and a clear revelation of your feelings that, you know, okay, let's both do this versus somebody sneaking off and cheating and then catching feelings and leaving a person, right? We all know where that dark road ends. So I'm sure there are stories that are inspiring. I'm sure, you know, like the male female couple and starts dating the woman and it all sort of vaporizes. I'm sure there's an equal amount of those as well. But it's,
oh, for sure.
It's, yeah, it's very interesting to see how the world will continue to change in the next decade with AI partners, right? That's kind of crazy.
I mean, my sister claims to me that she would love a robot boyfriend. In some ways, I understand why. I think she likes the companionship. She watches the movie Her a lot and thinks about what it could be like. One thing I do want to say about cheating and openness. We had a couple on where they had an open relationship for a bit. That wasn't an issue at all. Open, closed, whatever. But there was financial infidelity.
Mm.
That they almost couldn't recover from. He had $35,000 of secret credit card debt. This did not go over well.
Oh, hell no.
This, the openness, they could speak so clearly and thoughtfully and lovingly about what they needed in their openness for the short time they were open, however long that was. Money, that was harder to talk about. There was a lot of shame there. So I never want to assume that, you know, when I talk about my own parents, I think about infidelity, but their inability to communicate about finances was actually, it probably led to whatever other problems they had. That, I don't think my mom cared about anything except for that, you know, being able to trust that the person you're with is responsible, you know, with your money.
Right. And it just, yeah, it goes down to deeper issues of trust and did you pick the right person, right?
Yeah.
And so it's super interesting and fascinated. And you talked a little bit about how you're getting a lot of questions about friendship, and friendship is being covered in a lot of the mainstream media. Like, it's harder, you know, there's a loneliness epidemic. It's harder to make friends as an adult. What are the questions you're getting asked by people?
I think they range from, I am sick of hearing my friend talk about her love life and her, and watching friends make the same mistakes and patterns, and to, you know, just transitions in relationships, friends who have kids, friends who suddenly, you know, have kids who are grown up. Like, how do you maintain these important connections? I think that for a lot of women in particular who maybe got married later or not at all, their friends were their chosen family and partners, non-romantic partners. Therefore, when they partner up, it's really disorienting. How much can they give to a partner versus their friends? These are really long relationships. You know, I'm coming off watching White Lotus, where, you know, it's sort of a critique, I think, a little bit about women friends that are hard to watch, right? And for as much as you might despise some of these characters, there's like a little bit of truth into somebody who's seen you for 30, 40 years, and you may have not made the same, you know, had the same evolution. So, but a lot of it also is loneliness. And I am sad to say, and that I still get questions about people with partners who don't want them to befriend people of the opposite sex. And I thought that in 2025, I could also be very naive about this, because I just sort of feel like I've always had a bunch of guy friends, and guess what? I don't want to sleep with them and they don't want to sleep with me. And we had plenty of time to do that.
Right,
our friends from college were like, we had 2 decades of free nights and single times to do any of it. And it sounded pretty gross. It sounded pretty gross to us. So yes, of course there are exceptions to this rule, but what becomes difficult is if you want to make a new friend.
Yeah.
Like, it's not fair, right? It's not fair. And you know, I always say to these letter writers, like, there are a lot of steps between finding somebody cool to hang out with and having an emotional affair. And I don't, it just, one is not necessarily the other. One of my best friends is a guy, a married guy I've known for years. And when I became a close friend of his, some people were like, oh, like, what is it? You know, is that, what does his wife think about this? And I'm telling you, within 1 second of meeting me, she was like, oh, that's fine. The vibes were clear. And they're like family to me. And that's the other thing. It's like, are you being involved? Is this a secret thing? Is this a covert thing? And most, you know, if it's not, it's probably fine. So I get that question a lot too with friendships. And that's a little bit different now that more people are working remotely. In fact, I miss some of those letters about, because usually it's a work friend, right? It's also why I have a little bit of an issue with the term work spouse. I have used it myself, but I want to get in the practice of not saying that, because, like, it's not like a spouse. It's like your best friend at work, right? It's not, yeah. I get why we make that joke, but it sort of adds to the weirdness.
Right. You're right. Work spouse is, it blurs those lines automatically.
It does. And if we didn't have the misconception about it, I wouldn't care. But I do still get letters that are like, my new boyfriend doesn't like that I have guy friends. And the person writing in is like 46. And I'm like, come on. Like,
you've been single for this long. And if you're 45, of course you have a group of friends, right? It's a different thing, right? When I think people have a long-term marriage and then they're suddenly wanting to be with a new girlfriend or guy friend that they've never hung out with. And you just have to, like, it's a case by case to your
point. It is. And when something feels off, it might be. But if it always feels off, if you're feeling like you can't trust your partner with anyone of the opposite sex that is single, or, you know, when they're alone, like, you got to think about yourself and the relationship. And that's a pattern at that point. And I'd like to think, you know, we are all lonely. And if you find somebody cool at work, and you want to talk to them and hang out with them and get a drink after, like, I want people to be able to do that.
Totally. 100%. Right. And if you find yourself always paranoid about that, there's probably either some trauma with you in the past that you can explore, or maybe you just haven't picked the right person. Maybe the person
totally
afraid that you're with a cheater.
Yeah, I get it, right? I always joke that all of the times that I was dumped, like, people dumped me without cheating. Like, maybe they cheated, but most of the time they just were happy to be without me and no one else. Like, they chose no one over me. So I laugh and say, like, oh, if only they'd been like, I found this other person. But no, they were like, I might just be fine by myself.
Right. I'd rather be alone.
I am choosing to be alone and not dating you as opposed to dating you. And that felt, you know, not much better. So, you know, I know why everybody wants control of a situation because they're afraid to get hurt, but friendship is good.
Yeah. I love that. Well, you've been a total delight, Meredith. Thank you so much for sharing your super interesting life and stories. And thank you for the work that you're putting out there.
Well, thank you. And it's so nice to know that people are helping other people find love. And one last thing I did want to say is that, like, it shouldn't matter, but I am seeing a lot more letters from women who are dating people their age and younger. And it's not that it's better or worse or anything. It's just, I think for a long time, we operated in a world where women aged into a place where they didn't feel valuable. And a wonderful trend I see is that that hasn't been true for a long time. And if you're starting to feel like it's true, go elsewhere. Because even my guy friends who were single in their late 40s, they want the opposite of loneliness is a great companion. And being with someone who doesn't get them makes them lonely. And I am watching women left and right not have some of those problems that are of long ago, right?
Which we love.
Yeah, maybe we can thank Nicole Kidman for continuing to make movies where she's with much younger people. I think that's it. I'm going to give credit a little bit to Nicole Kidman, but that is a real tide turn, and I appreciate it.
And Nicole Kidman, you know, married Tom Cruise, who was much shorter than her. So,
yes,
you know, she's done the younger, shorter. So be like Nicole.
Listen, one day I will come back on and tell you the story of the guy who is under 5 feet tall and would not date me and was the sexiest guy I ever knew. So also,
wait,
please know
it now.
Oh, yeah. I had a crush on a guy in college. If you're listening, sir, you know who you are. And I think he was like I'm 5'3" and a half. I'm not a tall person. He was a few inches shorter than me. And so anybody who I went to college with will agree with me that he was magnetic, attractive, funny, very cynically funny. And I was very charmed by, very smitten, and he was not smitten. And married a woman. That woman is taller than him, obviously. But like, he just had vibes. And like, I am sorry. I also was with a guy who was 6'6". I loved him very much. He could not hold a candle. All with him, I was like, I can't hear half of what you're saying because you keep looking up. And
too damn tall.
Too damn tall. Reach me something fine. But I got to tell you, everybody's women in shoes, they're tall. Shorter men are wonderful. So.
Amen. I love that. That's a great ending to this, right, Mr. 5-0?
Yeah.
Hottie.
Still my Facebook friend somewhere. So love him very much. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Someday I'll have to find him and have him on the podcast. He's married.
He's married and like too cool for school. Like he's just like, whatever, it's me. Like just the confidence. Ugh. So much to learn.
I love that. Well, thank you so much. And where can people, can we read your column online? Tell us where we can get more Meredith.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you like podcasts, find Love Letters. It's a great, we're doing our whole season about whether people can change. And the stories are pretty fantastic. The Love Letters column you can also find online at boston.com/loveletters. But I would try the podcast. It's the season is making me very joyful.
Oh, I love that. Well, you have brought me great joy. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
All right, thank you.
Smart daters, if you're ready for love, jump in, do something new. We talked a lot this episode about lots of different things. If you decide that you're finally ready to do something different this week. Invest in yourself. Whatever that is, take a new step. Be brave, it's your season of change, as Meredith said. So do something to change it up, because you know what that definition of insanity is: doing the same dang thing over and over and over. And you know, if your picker needs fixing, you know who to call. Call me, go to smartdatingacademy.com, follow us on Instagram at Smart Dating Academy, and we will help to tweak your love life for the better. So until next time, I bid you farewell. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.